Welcome to the Promised Brand Podcast, where if you are a CEO, founder, VP level leader, strategist, or just somebody trying to figure out the building of a brand, this is the show for you. I am Luke Frazier, founder of Parable Brand, where we are on a mission to simplify brand strategy so that companies can increase employee engagement and client retention. People, we are all about building brands for culture. Wherever you work, wherever your environment is, we want you to be an environment that you can see your brand as beneficial, not just to you, but to the people you serve. And so here on this podcast, that is what you will hear. Now, today is very exciting because we are continuing on a brand spotlight series with a company called The Sales Rebellion. They are an amazing organization looking at differentiating the way or differing the way we perceive the selling process, and they're kind of rebelling against the old way. Now, this continued conversation moves forward today with head of sales, Jeremiah Griffin, and we are excited to share this story of transformation, amazing worth ethic, and family values with you today. Folks, welcome to the Promise Brand. Enjoy today's episode. All right, everybody, welcome back to our brand series here at the Promise Brand, where we're highlighting companies by way of their people. And this is our continuation of our series with The Sales Rebellion. And today, my friends, we are speaking with none other than head of sales, Ginger Viking, resident attention getter, and many others, dad, husband, all of the things, Jeremiah Griffin. Jeremiah, welcome to the show. How are you doing, my friend?
Doing well. Appreciate you having me on. Can't complain. Lots of stuff and challenges to tackle all the time. We have a lot of fun here at the Rebellion, as you know. So it's a good time every day.
I love it. I was just thinking as we began here, we have a conversation with Dale on another podcast. Dale and I sort of talked about how we met. I think I met Dale first, and then I think I saw you guys do some kind of live on LinkedIn. And one thing I noticed about that live is, if people know Dale, he is the firecracker energy bunny, energizer bunny. You know, you got to kind of like tune him down sometimes, or you just let him go and he blazes a trail. Jeremiah, I noticed that you are not quite the energizer bunny. Yet, you are a man full of depth when it comes to wisdom and words and writing and communication. I want to start there. Where did that come from in your life, this love of words and communication and copywriting and all these kinds of things? Because of course you're in sales now, but I noticed that about you. Not that not being a fireball is amazing, but you have an amazing gift in words and in communication. So I'm curious, where did that all start for you?
Yeah, so it's kind of funny that you say that about like not being the Energizer Bunny, because when we all get together, like in the Rebellion, and generally I am an extrovert. So
interesting.
I am not the life of the party necessarily, but I will usually be in the center of the action and making lots of jokes, which you can kind of see in my writing and stuff, right?
Absolutely.
But on camera, you know, in a podcast type of thing or a LinkedIn live, I tend to not be as lively for some reason. I don't really know what it is. It's not necessarily lack of confidence. Mm-hmm. Probably depends on who you're with, right?
Sure.
Like if you're with Dale, you know, he's got that huge following on LinkedIn. So you do kind of want to just wind him up and let him go. He's got so much knowledge and wisdom around sales in general. And so that's probably how that goes. But I do enjoy getting in the mix of things and being in the center. So it is kind of funny that you mentioned that right at the outset. But as far as the copywriting and the wordsmithing and all that stuff, I guess it's been in my blood for a long time. Mm-hmm. Whenever I was little, when I say little, probably like 8, 9, 10 years old.
Yeah.
I started to watch sports on TV. Mm-hmm. And so dating myself here back then, you know, there was absolutely no internet. There was, you know, basically mm-hmm. like cable TV was not a lot of people had cable TV.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, watching CBS, you know, NBA games and NFL games and, mm-hmm. and stuff like that, or NBC. And so, but what I did is I had my favorite sports teams, and I would type up on a typewriter. Type up like end of year summaries and like talk about the star players and basically like I was writing a magazine.
Yeah.
I was, you know, my parents had got me a subscription to Sports Illustrated for a year. Mm-hmm. And so I, you know, read all those magazines from cover to cover, other than the swimsuit issue. They didn't have that one. but I would read those from cover to cover, and then I would like write my own articles about sports figures and other things and stuff, and type them out and make my own magazines. So that's probably where it started.
Yep.
You know, of course, as a teenager, it's not as cool to like write and things like that. But as I got into after I was in sales for a few years and I got into my own business, mm-hmm. I started to write my own ads. Mm-hmm. Write my own copy for an email newsletter mm-hmm. And a physical newsletter, all sorts of different things that we did with the three separate businesses that I started. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where it took off. I would say it really came to like new life when I became a student of the Rebellion, which is how I first got started with Rebel stuff. Mm-hmm. I got back into B2B sales after selling the business. And as I kind of came into my own as a student, I realized that writing was really the thing that I missed, like creative writing. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to write poetry and different things like that. But I realized that I could use writing in a creative way to get the attention of prospects. It's mm-hmm. never going to be like this guy that could persuade people to do something that they didn't want to do. Yeah. You know, just this. Some people have that gift, but there's not that many people. But not the most gifted closer or anything like that, but I could really get people's attention through words mm-hmm. and even use it throughout the process as well. So that's kind of where it started, mm-hmm. how it was and how it's going, I guess.
I love it. So, you know, what's beautiful for me is, you know, language. I think language drives culture wherever you go, right? And language, the language we continue to use in our lives, or the way we see ourselves, or business, right, or the way people perceive our business, like that all kind of drives a certain narrative and a certain story. And so for you, where has, you know, this kind of marriage between language and story and then sales, which really like old view of sales, you know, is like you got to always be closing, like these, you know, you imagine gosh, I can't remember the movie with Alec Baldwin, you know, where they're talking about and they're talking about we got terrible leads and we can't do this, like, so there's a contrast with like this is the way sales had always been, which was maybe more manipulative, right? In the 80s we had big ad campaigns where it was like, we're learning how to manipulate your feelings and emotions to make you feel like you're missing something. How have you taken your kind of creative writing and looked at the way things have been done in the past and started to change that story and narrative? And maybe why did you want to be a part of changing that narrative too?
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because like the old school sales methods of, mm-hmm. you know, when you're having a conversation with someone, you know, hard closing, you know, all that stuff that we hear about, that was really writing, copywriting also had its own issues. So you talk about some of those old ads, long form sales letters where writers would just make they would just lie.
Yeah.
Or they would be really vague right. about stuff or stretch the truth and make these bold claims and exaggerations. And now, you know, if you do that, like, you can get in trouble. Like, the FTC will come and, you know, there's a lot of old copywriters that made a lot of money that are that have done jail time because of their writing.
We will 20x your lifetime.
Yeah. So that would be one impetus for changing the way you do things, right? But but when I think about anything, like, the first thing that I always come back to is just being honest and transparent. Mm-hmm. And it really is just like, you can always boil it down to the golden rule, right? Like, mm-hmm. treat people how you would want to be treated. If you don't want people to lie to you, don't lie to them, whether it's a, you know, little stretch of the truth or an extreme exaggeration or a bold-faced lie. It's mm-hmm. all, you know, it's all kind of in the same bucket. So so when I think of it that way, but we still want to be able to get people's attention. We mm-hmm. still want to talk about the things that we can do for them, mm-hmm. which is the persuasive part of writing. It's not really like trying to take them from, you know, we want to highlight future state and also like where they're at now and show them how their future can be better.
Yeah.
But again, we want to do that in an honest way.
Yeah.
So when I think of it in terms of that, you really have to get creative. Mm-hmm. And the more and more I started to write like for and with students in my position now that I'm in mm-hmm. the Rebellion and kind of help with some of those copywriting things, it was all about like focusing on, you know, the problems of the prospect and how can we communicate our value in a fun and engaging way that adds some nostalgia, mm-hmm. That, you know, humor, of course, is a big thing, makes mm-hmm. them laugh to where they're going to remember it and they will engage with it because they're emotionally invested in what they're reading. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where I've ended up mm-hmm. is like writing things that are honest and transparent with people mm-hmm. So that they know, you know, they're going to be entertained by the writing, but they know that what they're getting is truth.
Yeah.
You know, there's not really any fluff. They're just, you know, they understand that I'm writing in a way that I'm trying to get them to read the whole thing mm-hmm. without lying to them.
Yeah.
And so that's basically the approach that, you know, we take now.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. There is such a fine line too, because we want to be persuasive, right? This is the whole point. Like, we have something hopefully that you need as a business. And so on some level, I've got to be a little bit persuasive as to why I'm different or better than somebody else. But the mode of transportation for that is with, to your point, honesty and kind of clarity and all truth, not half truth. and so there is a fine line, though, because people still, the amount of bad emails I get on a daily basis, really should make me a better salesperson, because I found myself wanting to type those same emails. But it's just, it is wild. And so I've been so grateful for the Sales Rebellion because there is a lot more clarity. You know, one of the things you kind of started to highlight on is like these creating curiosity and these moments of, you know, nostalgia, right? Like, there's something about when you invite someone into maybe a story of old that they didn't realize could be a part of their business story. It develops that curiosity in a way that develops relationships that, you know, last a long time. And that is such a difference when it comes to the sales world. It all makes me really curious. And I want to kind of step back with that notion in our mind. You mentioned having a handful of businesses, selling them, getting into B2B sales, and then becoming a student of the Rebellion. Obviously now you are head of sales at the Sales Rebellion. Many people would think the pinnacle of my life is owning a business. The pinnacle of my life is making X amount of dollars. Specifically in B2B sales, it's very viable. So why make the transition to join the Sales Rebellion if you know, many people, again, think this is like the pinnacle of living?
Yeah. I mean, in some ways it can be, as far as career is concerned.
Sure.
You can build the life that you want, you know, the flexibility, the income, you know, there's really no cap on that. You know, there's a lot of things, positive things that you can do for your life through mm-hmm. a business. At the same time, a lot of people never really get there.
Yeah.
You know, they either create themselves a more demanding job, or one of the biggest issues, I think, is really that they tie their almost their entire identity
yes.
into the fact that they're an entrepreneur, or they're a right. business owner. And so, you know, if you ask someone, what do you do? You know, and they own a business, they'll launch into a really long conversation about that business. It's like their baby. They could talk about the yeah. business more than they would, you know, more yeah. than they could talk about their kids. And so there's pitfalls there. You know, if you've got, like myself, I am probably prone to being like a workaholic.
Yeah.
And just go all the time. You know, that can obviously be a pitfall when you own your own business, which is why I didn't have just one. You know, I had to start another one and another one.
Yeah.
So you can really get into traps that things just aren't always what they seem.
Yeah.
You know, so while there are a lot of good things, there are traps that are difficult to avoid, especially if it's kind of like your first foray into professional business. There's mm-hmm. a lot of things that you don't really know,
oh, yeah.
which is why getting a coach on anything is yep. important, right? But so you're learning as you go, but you just, it's very easy to fall into this just constant, like, I got to be working,
yeah.
you know, on the business, in the business, or I don't feel like I have purpose almost.
Yeah.
It's hard to explain, I guess.
You're preaching the choir yeah. right now.
But there were multiple reasons, and yeah. they were all really surrounding family. You know, yeah. when I sold my businesses, my oldest at the time was 7, mm-hmm. I think. About 7 years old.
Yeah.
And so I had, you know, I have 4 kids, and so they were ages 2 to 7.
Wow.
And so I just felt like I didn't, you know, I wasn't spending enough time with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that basically things had just run its course, and you can always get into entrepreneurship or back into entrepreneurship. Yeah. And so that ship has never really sailed, but I felt the need to exit those businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't just sit around. So I said, all right, well, I'll get back into what I know and go into B2B sales.
Yeah.
And struggled because it had changed over the 10 years that I was an entrepreneur. B2B yeah. sales game had changed. And that's where the rebellion came in, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I joined up with them, really impacted my sales walk mm-hmm. Drastically, not just from a quota perspective, but mm-hmm. just, you know, the experience that you give people. Part of yeah. that ethics, you know, conversation, not that I didn't have it before,
yeah.
But it just strengthened those beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And even just those times where you're tempted to potentially like not tell the whole truth or, you know, yeah. just omit something that would kill a deal or something,
yeah.
You know, not doing that anymore.
Yeah.
Or not even, you know, considering it.
Yeah.
So, and then making the transition out of like just an individual contributor role back into something that's more of like leadership and yeah. wearing multiple hats. That's probably a little bit more like entrepreneurship than as an individual contributor. Mm-hmm. I find that it's a really good blend between the two.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, while I don't have all my time available for prospecting and therefore like to increase my income in that way,
mm-hmm.
I'm challenged in other ways. I'm also able to use creative talents for writing. So there's, you know, the coaching aspect of it, you know, kind of like assistant coaching. There's the mm-hmm. the sales part of it. There's the marketing side of it as well. And so,
yeah.
so for me, it's just kind of a good, like a really good marriage between both of my past worlds, I guess. And,
yeah.
and so that's why I'm doing what I'm doing and why I love it so much.
Yeah. So you were, in many ways, you are, you know, product of the rebellion, being a student first and before joining the team. Why, one, what kind of stood out to you differently with the Sales Rebellion? You know, there are plenty of other sales training things out there. And two, what was that leap like into actually like you know, I'm going to join this team. This is awesome. This is, I could totally do this the rest of my life, or at least for this season. You did speak on some of the differences from, you know, or the connections between entrepreneurship, but being a product of the rebellion, what stood out to you with the rebellion then into joining and being on the team now?
Yeah, it's different, you know, on one side of the curtain as opposed to the other, you know, like the Wizard of Oz. And
you're telling me it's not as good, like
all those cliches. Well, I mean, that's probably a bad example, right? But as a student of the rebellion, you know, it's all, there's a lot of take there, right? Because you're paying for coaching, obviously. And so, the rebellion's job is to pour into the student and give you not just the tools that you need to succeed, as far as like physical tools, market tools, letter campaigns, things like that. But the emotional, you know, mindset tools, you know, to succeed as well. And so that really, if you talk to myself or any other students that have really leaned in and had success, the mindset portion is so much bigger than the actual tools, because you can't even really use the physical tools the right way without the right mindset.
Yeah.
And so that part hasn't changed. It's just gotten, you know, it's just gotten stronger and there's more depth to it. You just, you're diving deeper into those mindset things. So on the other side of the curtain, obviously, like there's a lot more giving. Yeah. You know, you're spending time with students, helping to coach, writing things for them, and so there is a. I mean, it's a big difference for sure. But the things that have stayed constant and the same, the leadership. You know, Dale, Jeff, as the co-founders, what you see is what you get. Yeah. Really, which is how I always want it to be anyway, that it's not, you know, it's not different on a coaching call than it is in real life. You know, so you're getting the same person, the same, you know, the same values, the same morals, the same advice, you know, nothing is really withheld, and you're getting, it's just very uniform across the board. And so when we think of it from a brand perspective, I guess like we've really obviously taken on the identity of our founders. And not like we're cloning, you know, trying to make clones or anything like that. But that is the whole thing that's carried through like every part of the rebellion, from the look and feel of the site all the way down to the actual teaching and the things that people use. So being able to see like behind the curtains of all that stuff has been really interesting. You know, also kind of understanding as a small business, a startup, essentially, like all the things that, having come from, you know, having startups myself in the past, all the things that don't exist that you're just kind of like getting by, you know, and doing your best without these things existing. So coming in and like creating, you know, putting like more structure and like creating assets around the things that we already, you know, just kind of taught over and over again in sessions, but now empowering people to be able to do things more themselves rather than taking coaching call time to like go through the actual like nuts and bolts of running a campaign or something. Now, you know, we've got assets to be able to do things like that. So there's a lot that goes into that, but yeah, that's some of the things that I've experienced along the way.
And it's a heck of a beautiful journey. You kind of wouldn't want it any other way in some respects. Right. And so I've been asking kind of everybody this, but what has been your favorite company experiences? Like your favorite times to be like, yeah, I'm on this team, over these past couple of years?
We're a fully remote company. So, we have a really good, you know, culture, as a remote company, and we're still small. So that does make it easier. But we regularly communicate through, you know, group text messages and emails and Slack and things like that. I'd say some of my favorite times, of course, are going to be in person. Mm-hmm. So being able to go on, you know, business trips, you know, to for sales trips and things. When I say that, going out to like coach teams and yeah. stuff. So, you know, being there with Dale or our first company retreat this mm-hmm. last January was probably, everybody could probably say that that's yeah. our favorite time where we were all, it's the only time we've all been together.
Right.
Lots of planning, but just lots of fun together as well. Mm-hmm. And then for everybody to be able to come together and see, oh yeah, everybody is pretty much the same as, you know, again, as you, yeah. as you see on the group text, as right. you see on the video calls.
Right.
And just having like very sweet fellowship, yeah. with the, you know, with the team, even with differences of opinion.
Yeah.
On everything from, you know, political stuff, you know, the political spectrum to, you know, where we should go next in the, you know, direction of the company or something. Yeah. So, but everybody respecting each other mm-hmm. and being able to take things from everybody and move forward. It's a place I could say right now, it's a place with like no ego.
That's awesome.
So there's no big egos getting in the way of, oh, you know, this is the way I think it should be done. So mm-hmm. we're not even really going to discuss it or think about it, or we'll discuss it. But I'm not really going to think about it and take into consideration that stuff, right?
Yeah.
So it's been really neat to see that part of it. But yeah, by far the best times were the in-person stuff, yeah. especially that January retreat.
Yeah. So. You know, being this mostly remote company, obviously you guys are very active digitally across the world, as far as I know, kind of clients all over the world. And it makes me curious for you, cross cultures, how you hope other people experience and see or perceive the brand.
Yeah, that's a good question. 'Cause I kind of tackle that in writing sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, where is our rebel located? And yeah. if it's in a different country, then there are different cultures and there mm-hmm. are expectations mm-hmm. essentially around business communication or just communication in general, things yeah. that might be funny to an American, you know, whether it's a certain level of sarcasm or whatever. And some of that is obviously dependent on the specific recipient, right?
Sure.
But we know that people are shaped by their surroundings, their, you know, their culture. So an American business person, while they are different and some people are going to like this and some people aren't, mm-hmm. generally we can say that the, you know, the general consensus is that this would hit for, you know, 80% of people. And so the 20% of people that just hate it, okay, yeah. well, they probably just weren't going to be people that we work with, right?
Yeah.
But it may not be that way in other cultures. Mm-hmm. And so so I think about this a lot in my own writing, but mm-hmm. But ultimately I think what it comes back to for the rebellion is that we want to be a place where people feel like they belong. Yeah. You know, salespeople all over the world are still pretty much in the same boat, right? Mm-hmm. There's a general, you know, distrust, mistrust, either one of those works maybe.
Yeah.
lack of trust. There we go. There's yeah. a lack of trust for salespeople, no matter where you are. Mm-hmm. Some places it's higher, some places it's lower. Mm-hmm. And not just because of sales, but I think there's also this kind of general feeling of loneliness and mm-hmm. lack of community as well. Mm-hmm. But especially in like that professional environment of selling, because there are still a lot of old school tactics going, you know, around that, you know, they just kind of get rehashed and repackaged yeah. and stuff. And so, so people do still have leadership that are micromanaging in them and stuff. And so, right. So we want it to be a place where people feel like they, not only can come and get the tools that they need to, adapt, that we can help them adapt to, mm-hmm. But, you know, kind of put out in the marketplace that will get them results that, that lead to success in their sales career, yeah. You know, lead to conversations that they can have and those appointments that they need to generate to take mm-hmm. people through a sales cycle and stuff. But ultimately, our mission is to serve.
Yeah.
So we want to do it in that way, but we want people to have a real sense of community, no matter where they are, and a sense of belonging that, you know, I've always said that the rebellion to me feels like, you know, when you go on a trip and you want to go on a vacation or whatever, and you had, even if they had a really good time, mm-hmm. when you come back home, you know, you kind of walk through the front door and you feel like, oh, I'm home. It feels good to be home. Yeah. And that's kind of like the feeling that I have with the rebellion, and that, you know, that I had, you know, back when I started as a student, mm-hmm. you know, all the way, and I continue to have now. And so that's the feeling that I want people to experience.
I love that.
No matter where they live at in the world, mm-hmm. is that they feel like I'm home, where it's a place of no judgment. Mm-hmm. You know, even though my political differences are, you know, they're probably different from you, they're different from other people, you know, religious differences, all those things yeah. that people get riled up about
yeah.
and tend to not be able to respect others' differences of opinion mm-hmm. And judge them for it. Mm-hmm. We want it to be a place of you know, no judgment, you know, mm-hmm. love, to where like we can have differences of opinion. We can even talk about it.
Yeah.
We can even disagree.
Yeah.
But there can still be love and belonging. And everything like that. So that's really if I were to boil it down, what yeah. I want people to experience and feel as far as the rebellion goes.
So powerful. As we look to kind of land this particular plane of conversation, a couple of more thoughts I wanted to dive into with you. One of them just being this idea that is thrown around a lot as far as language and lifestyle goes, I think, within the Sales Rebellion, is choose legendary. It's a common, I don't even know if it's meant to be, but it feels like a tagline at this point of the Sales Rebellion. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, it's definitely one of our core values. I guess probably it would definitely be a tagline at this point. Choosing legendary. You know, it comes down to legacy. So as a dad, that's maybe a little bit easier. As you look at, you know, like I said, I have four kids, so I look at four little people as my, you know, a direct link to my, you know, what my legacy will be. Mm-hmm. Now it's bigger than just my own children, of course. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of, I guess, a little, like I said, maybe it could be a little more natural to a dad. Mm-hmm. So when I think of choosing legendary, it does come down to legacy. Mm-hmm. When we think of the term legendary, though, you know, a legend is someone that, you know, people continue to talk about.
Yeah.
Or that really, not even necessarily that, it's probably more or less impact that continues throughout time, even after you're gone. So personally, you know, I think of this in terms of more like moral, religious, I guess, because mm-hmm. My life isn't about really like myself and living for myself as a Christian, you know, and we have core, you know, Christian beliefs kind of at the, you know, at the rebellion that's at mm-hmm. our core. My impact really shouldn't just be like, oh, well, I hope people talk about me after I'm gone and talk about like what a great writer I was, or mm-hmm. not that I'm an awesome writer or anything like that, that people would talk about me after that. But that's really not what it's about. It's what kind of like lasting impact are you having on, you know, your children and other people that they are then going to, whether they tell, you know, their kids or others that, oh, I got this from Jeremiah Griffin. Mm. You know, like they probably won't.
Yeah.
They will adopt it into their life and then kind of pass those lessons on. Mm-hmm. You can do that for bad or good.
Yeah.
So what is the level that you're impacting people at? And it could be, you know, tactical things in the sales world that are still good. Mm-hmm. You know, as long as they are good, you know, honest and true and stuff like that. But usually it's going to be, you know, stuff that's more, you know, intrinsic, I guess. Yeah. And so that's really going to impact people's lives, not just their career.
Yeah.
And so to me, like, that's really what it's about. Like, how many people is one? And to me, it's not necessarily, I guess, right about the number, mm-hmm. right? It's really like, it's like the 1 inch, either the 1 mile wide hole that's an inch deep or the 1 inch wide hole that's a mile deep. Mm-hmm. It's really about depth of how you impact people.
Yeah.
So you could impact 10 people very deeply mm-hmm. and have much more of a legacy than impacting, 1,000 people just, mm-hmm. Just a little bit.
Yeah.
And so that's what I think of in terms of choosing legendary mm-hmm. is like, what are people going to take from you? Mm-hmm. What are they then going to pass on to others?
Yeah.
How far is that going to carry?
Yeah.
But ultimately, like it's about God,
right.
To me.
Yeah.
Than just myself. Cause that's where I'm getting it all from anyway.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I love that. You know, when I think about, just even what you're talking about and choosing legendary and leaving legacy, I think about these are the stories we're living out. And if it, for people, it's from a religious standpoint, we're actively trying to live out God's story for other people. And, those stories, then people get to live out in themselves and then pass on to others. We're innately as humans, and of course, a parable, I'm just really fascinated by stories, but as humans, we live easiest, and we live truest by way of story. And one of my favorite forms of stories throughout history, that's a big term, recently in history, are the series of Disney movies that were made that impact us all. And I ask everybody this, and your response was the movie Up. Why did you choose Up when asked about your favorite Disney movie?
Yeah, one was probably that, like, I couldn't remember some of them. there's some really good ones.
I just wanted to get through this form and fill out my name, and I had to.
That's one, though, that I would say comes to mind a lot, because while I haven't, like, watched it over and over again, sure. I've probably seen it, maybe it's only been twice.
Yeah.
But every time I watch it, there's two specific scenes, right? There's the opening scene where it goes through the life of him. I don't even remember the character's name, but him and his wife, and she ends up dying, and he's alone in the beginning. And then near the end, he like opens this photo album that they put together, scrapbook and stuff through their life that she put together. I think she was the one that kind of put stuff together. And as he's flipping through it near the end of the movie, he realizes that there's like pages that he hasn't seen, right? And so he flips to those other pages, and there's more, or maybe this is the first time maybe he's seeing the photo album at all, or something like that. Again, I'm butchering it now, right? But like, but basically the end is where, she's put all these pictures in, and and then knowing that she was going to be gone, said like, have a new adventure. Because there was these things that they wanted to do. They wanted to travel to specific places. And they were never able to do it because life happened. Their car would break down and stuff. And so, but his wife considered their life together as an adventure.
Yeah.
And so her perspective on it, and essentially like his legacy to her, their combined and shared legacy was one of adventure, even though some people might look at their life as ordinary. Mm-hmm. And so, then she challenges him that like, your life doesn't stop here, it continues on. And so to me, that's just like a really good story when you think of like, even just the stuff that we've, kind of talked about today.
Yeah.
Is that, and so really there's probably like, there's funny things about it, throughout the movie, the little kid, the dog, the squirrel, getting struck by the squirrel and stuff, funny things, but really like those two scenes probably make the entire movie for me.
Not a dry eye in the building, Jeremiah. Phenomenal way of surmising that story. What a wonderful story you have. And we are so grateful to get a piece of it today. feel like we could continue to go on, but we'll leave it at it as it is now, because you have more adventures to run, my friend. How can people follow along with the rebellion, follow along with you, just eat of your beautiful writing? How can they get connected with you?
Yeah, there's a few different ways. So, you know, you can always find us online, you know, thesalesrebellion.com, and people can fill out a form there if they want more info on programs and different things that we do. All the coaching programs are great. You're going to get awesome rebel coaches that led me in my journey, in addition to myself, that has walked that same, you know, rebel journey and is now kind of on the other side, but still doing the same things that we teach people to do, right? So there's that way. You know, LinkedIn, of course. I'm not as extensive as a content creator as Dale is, but I do create some things on there and share some posts. So that's a good way to connect. And then the other way I'd say is the Slack group. So we have a free Slack group for, you know, there's thousands of rebels in there. That's a great place to join community, again, kind of to get that community and some sense of belonging, like I talked about earlier. That's free to join. You can get in there and ask questions, you know, not just be a taker of advice, but also a giver of advice as well. And just kind of explore the community a little bit more, get to know us a little bit. You know, maybe that will lead into a student relationship or something at some point, if, you know, if they feel that that's a good, you know, good thing for them to do. Maybe it won't. But either way, we want to be there in some capacity to help serve others through that community as well.
So I love it.
Those are probably the three best places.
And it's so worth it. Hop into the Slack community. It's so worth it. It's where I got started. And it's really, really powerful. Jeremiah Griffin, thank you so much for sharing with us today, my friend.
Yeah, no problem at all. Thanks for having me.